Hello, my darlings. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm your host, Elle Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. How is everyone doing? It is May, and I'm in LA, and it's raining. So things are a little bizarre. God knows we need the rain, but very interesting spring thus far. I hope everyone is doing good. Y'all doing good in your neck of the woods. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms like Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or wherever you're listening to us, we love, love, love. If you could give us some feedback, give us some stars, tell us what you think, just so we can get bumped up in the rankings and more people can hear about our podcast, because we're all about telling you how they got their music job. That's right. We talk to the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music biz to find out how exactly they got to where they are today. And it always has such interesting insight, advice, and also really good perspective and outlook for where the music industry is headed. So you can learn so much, and I hope you go back and listen to previous episodes. Last episode, I had the wonderful pleasure of speaking with Rosie Howe. She is the founder of Straight Up Music Supervision, a company that's all hers. She came out to LA and busted her butt to really make a name for herself as a music supervisor, and talks about the trials and tribulations and dealing with rejection and, you know, basically everything it takes to get a business like that off the ground. So just really, really great episode. I urge you to go back and listen to it. This week, I have the pleasure of speaking to another badass boss lady. Her name is Dawn Jones, and she is the founder of Press PR. That's right. She started this agency all by herself, and she's going to tell us all about it and her journey, and also about music and about telling stories. But before we do that, we're going to actually play a track from my first EP called Fool's Rush. This is off my first EP, Pick Me. Here we go. How'd you get that music job?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Tell me about your first memories of music. Tell me what it was like growing up in your household.
Oh, my first memories of music, they go back to a really early age. I guess my very first memory of music would be my dad teaching me guitar chords. And it was so funny because we had matching guitars. They were both black. And I used to, when I was really young, I would say like 3 or 4, I would go to work with him. He owned a store. And I would go to work with him. And during his breaks, when he didn't have customers, he would teach me guitar chords. And so I really didn't learn anything at that age. I just kind of banged around. But I remember playing with the guitar and having a matching guitar with my dad.
That's so fun.
Yeah. And then it just kind of kept going. When I was about 6, my family was really big into showing horses. And I think about 6 was when I like really, really discovered music and fell in love with it. We were at a horse show and they had this country bluegrass band playing for all of the people that were there. And I told my parents that night, I was like, I want to play the fiddle. There was a fiddle player there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Captured my attention. Yeah. And so since then it's been like, that's really when I fell in love with music, just that experience of falling in love with the music of the fiddle. So.
Wow. Now, did you start taking lessons or what happened?
I did. It was kind of a longer process. We had a piano and my parents told me, they said, well, if you want to learn how to play violin, then learn how to play the piano first. And so I did. And I took piano for several years. And then when I was about 13, I told my parents, I was like, look, I really want to play the fiddle. Can you like help me get there? And they were like, yeah, you've proven, you've practiced with the piano. So here you go. And they got me a violin and I started, and I've been playing ever since.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
So were you playing in music classes in school, or what did that kind of look like through high school?
Yeah. I mean, our school did not have orchestra or anything like that, that many schools do. So I didn't play with my peers in school until high school. For the first few years of playing, I just took lessons and did recitals and things like that. And then in high school, I got really involved in a program called FFA, Future Farmers of America. And where I grew up in Alabama, they had a string band competition for the FFA program. So I joined the string band at my high school and played with them throughout high school.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, what kind of music is that? Like, what kind of music are they playing?
Mostly country. It's kind of like the music of, you know, what you choose. But it's most where we were mostly revolved around country anyways. And yeah, and it was just like a little band of high school kids that love music and love to learn about it. So it was a really, really fun experience. It opened up a lot of doors for sure and like really introduced me to performing and that kind of thing. We got to open up for some really cool country artists like Sarah Evans and Rodney Atkins.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, they had a lot of opportunities available. And so it was a really big kind of like door opening into, hey, I want to do music full time.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, talk about a big stage.
Yeah,
my God, putting you on there like so young.
Yeah, it was
wow.
It was definitely crazy, but it definitely gave me the bug for the industry and for pursuing it after high school. I don't think I even really ever thought about it until I started doing that really heavily and realized that I could make a career out of something that I kind of viewed as just something I loved as a hobby. And so that those kind of experiences kind of opened my eyes to what it could be if I pursued that as a career.
I'm going to take a little bit of a segue here just because of my own ignorance. What's your take on the country genre? I'm always kind of fascinated by it. I'm really unfamiliar with it, shamefully to say. Like, I love, obviously, the classics like Dolly Parton and Johnny Cash, but I don't feel like I have a grasp on it. And I'm just wondering if you can just talk about it, your experience, like how you've maybe seen country music evolve.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a genre that's constantly evolving. I mean, you look at even just like 10 years ago or 5 years ago, the music of the country genre is different than what you hear today. I mean, growing up, the music was different than what we hear today. And I don't necessarily think like that's a bad thing. I kind of love that it's something that's always changing. The sounds are always changing. And, you know, a lot of people would say it in some instances drifts towards pop or something that's maybe more widely accepted. But what's always at the core of country music is storytelling.
Hmm.
And that's kind of where I have fallen in love with it. I'm a really big person that loves to dive into lyrics and like the stories of songs and the lyrics of songs and like really pays attention to that. And country music to me is one of the genres that really puts a focus on the story of the song and the lyrics of the song instead of just like the beat or the groove or, you know, whatever that might be. They really put a focus on kind of that storytelling aspect. And to me, that's like the core of country music.
That's a really good insight. I mean, I really don't have a lot of sort of like deep knowledge or intimate understanding of it, but I do get a sense from especially kind of the older country music that there's sort of this basis in like folk and spiritual gospel kind of spiritual, like church music. And I'm also Scottish on my dad's side. So I actually hear that similarity too with like Celtic music.
Yeah.
Especially when you said the fiddles.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually played a lot of Scottish and Celtic music
as
a fiddle player. And it's true. It's very similar in that aspect.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that, yeah, there's probably been a lot of influences and over the years and, you know, with just like America and like, you know, the 1800s and, you know, immigrant settlers, et cetera. So, and then what's your take on like Old Town Road, like this sort of like cross-pollination of rap and country, et cetera? I'm just curious.
I don't know if I like have a take on it. I like the song. my husband and I jammed to it in the car for sure. But I don't know. To me, it's just kind of like a song that's out there. I don't see it as a big kind of like monumental moment, if right. you know what I mean.
Right.
I think it's like, it'll have its moment and it's going to be a fun song and people enjoy it, but that's probably it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know that people love to place a lot of weight and like, yeah. what does this mean? But
it's a fun song.
It's a fun song. I agree with you. It is a fun song. And I'm glad it's getting sort of a wider audience, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So back to you. So you here you are performing with these big time country stars. And then where did you kind of go from there?
From there, I went to college. I decided to major in music business. And my goal...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Huh. My goal initially was to be a commercial musician, to do like session work and, you know, maybe touring one day, just really to be a professional musician.
So you were thinking like you're just going to be a professional like fiddle musician and just go wherever. That's good.
Not how it turned out.
right. Well, how did you pick the school?
That was kind of a interesting time in my life. I really had my heart set on a school in Nashville, Belmont University.
Good school. I applied
and gotten a partial scholarship and everything was going well. But at the time my family was moving to Colorado and I found a school, a tiny school in Durango, Colorado that had a music business program. And really I wasn't even thinking of it as an option. To me, like my plan was already laid out. Things had happened. I had signed the acceptance letter. Like I was going. And we went out to visit where my parents were going to be living. And I was introduced to this school just by visiting the town and was introduced to their music business program. And honestly, I fell in love with the town. I fell in love with Colorado, which if you've ever been, you know, that's so easy to do. And I kind of like had this feeling as we went home back to Alabama, I kind of had this feeling in my heart, like maybe this isn't where I'm supposed to be. Maybe I'm not meant to go to Nashville right away. Maybe I was just very unsure. And I am a Christian and I rely heavily on my faith in God. And so I prayed about it. And honestly, I just kind of felt that tug. I felt God telling me like, you know, you need to be in Durango. You need to go to this school. Trust me, like it's going to be wildly different from what you imagined, but it's going to work out in the end. And I struggled with that, honestly. I mean, I was 18 and I wanted to go to Nashville and that I was tunnel vision. And I struggled with that conviction, I guess you would say. But I realized it needed to happen. And so I and my parents talked about it and we made the decision. And I decided to go to Fort Lewis, which was the school in Durango. And it was hard. It was kind of hard to accept, like, I'm not going to this big university that I had dreamed about going to for 4 years, you know, I switched plans, but overall I'm really happy that it worked out the way it did because I don't think I would be where I am today and doing the things I'm doing today if I hadn't have made that switch.
Can you elaborate on that? Cause it's such a fascinating thing for me to hear about, especially when, yeah, it's like these choices that we make, especially when we're like 18 and it's like, I barely know my own name at 18.
Right. I get emotional even just thinking about it because it was such, I don't even know like how to put it into words. It was just such a feeling I had where I wanted this one thing so badly. Like I wanted to go to this one school so badly. But I knew that it wasn't right. I just knew that it just didn't feel right. And I think a big part of that is my faith and just the feeling I had from that and just trusting that God's plan was bigger than mine.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I think that was a big part of my decision personally. And I do think I would be somewhere different. I mean, my focuses would have been different. I wouldn't have had the same job opportunities or met the same people that ultimately have kind of led me to where I am today.
Yeah, that's so amazing. I love that. And thank you so much for sharing so honestly about that. And it reminds me of, you know, the author Malcolm Gladwell.
Mm-hmm.
He has like the Tipping Point, a bunch of books. But anyways, he talks about this thing with people going to Harvard versus going to, say, like a small liberal arts college. And surprisingly, in some cases, the people that go to the smaller liberal arts colleges do much better in school and beyond, because instead of being the small fish in the really big pond and feeling intimidated and overwhelmed and everybody's so good,
right,
they're in a much smaller pool. They're able to kind of stretch their wings, right, feel more confident, and it serves them. And it seems so counterintuitive because it's like, no, you go to the Ivy League,
right,
you go to Harvard, you go to Yale. And yet there are all these case studies of people that published more, that got better jobs, like, because again, their confidence had really been boosted by the fact that they weren't a small fish in a big pond. So I'm wondering, it may or may not have applied to you in that case, but yeah, I just want to hear more about how this school kind of formed you, and why was it such a significant experience for you in this career path?
Yeah, no, I actually really agree with that. I think that when you're in a smaller pond, so to speak, that you have more opportunity for experience. And the experiences are what have shaped my visions and dreams and goals for my career. You know, and I do agree with that. I think that that's a really valid point that he makes, because I think if I had have gone to the bigger school, I would have been lost. I was not the best fiddle player, in my age range, and I was not top of the class for that talent that's so necessary to succeed in the industry and as a musician. But at this school, I was able to have the experiences. I mean, I interned with a really great nonprofit for my 3 years of college. And throughout that internship alone, I learned so much about the industry. The internship that I did, they had a nonprofit where they did music education for schools and things like that in the area. They had a touring band that toured quite extensively. I mean, they played a few hundred shows a year. Like, they were constantly on the road. And then they also hosted a music festival in the town.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
These people were crazy busy. and they let me be a part of each of those things, and which is where I learned about a multitude of different aspects of the industry and kind of like where I found my niche and where I was comfortable and where I wanted to be. So like experiences like that. And I also had the experience to job shadow in a recording studio for a while. And you know, that taught me a lot too about being a musician and about recording and things like that, about production. So I think the experiences that being at a smaller school and being able to meet more people and network and connect with more people, I think that kind of validated the choice for me. And it took me, I'm not gonna lie, it took me a solid year to be happy to where I was. I was very much like, I don't know if I made the right decision. I wish I was there. I wish this was happening. But the longer I stayed at the school and came to understand the importance of the people I was meeting and the experiences I was having and kind of the one-on-one instruction and care from my instructors and professors who were really, really involved in helping me to set up my career, you know, I realized in the long run that that really made a huge difference for me.
Yeah. Now, did you have a major, or were you just like sort of general music business, or what was it?
So the way that the school was set up is that it was a music business major, and then you focused on an instrument because you had to be a musician in order to take the music business major.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Huh.
Yeah. You couldn't just be like a business student wanting to be in the music industry. You had to be able to play an instrument.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And so my major was officially music business, but I had a focus in violin studies. So I kind of got like a mini performance degree, I guess you would say.
Maybe
a minor.
Right.
Not like that on the paperwork, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And then the music business degree it encompassed everything else.
So were you performing while you were in college?
Oh, all the time. I was involved in several ensembles with my school. I was involved in a quartet. I was involved in an orchestra. I also performed with a Celtic band in the town that we lived in.
Cool.
They were not through the school. They were just people I met, and they performed quite a bit. So yeah, I did that. And then I was fortunate enough to meet some people throughout my college experience that played, you know, country or other types of music and would ask me to record occasionally on their albums. So that was a cool experience too, to be able to experience that side of, you know, recording as a session musician and things like that.
Now, is Durango like kind of a big music town? Because I know, like, I've been to the Durango Songwriting Conference out here.
Yeah. The Durango Songwriting Conference was actually founded by a guy who lived in Durango, which is why it's called the Durango Songwriting Conference. And I've been to it too. It's a really cool conference. But it's a small town. So the music scene is obviously going to be smaller than what you would experience in a bigger town, like Denver, per se. But the arts and music is really a focus to the community there. And so it's, for a town of its size, it's very robust and happening. I mean, it's very inclusive, and people really put an importance on arts and music.
That's great. So it's like you have both experiences of being at school, you know, being in this part of this community, and then obviously also being really involved with the town. And
yeah.
I'm assuming the nonprofit was also in Durango. Yeah.
Yeah, they were. And they were a big part of the community music scene as well. So I really got plugged in and was able to just really experience a lot. And yeah, I think being a part of that kind of community was also very influential and just kind of shaping me as a person and as a musician and as someone who wanted to be in the music industry, because it kind of showed you, like, when everyone is working together to create this kind of environment, it shows, and it comes through, and it comes through to the musicians, it comes through to the community and the audiences, and it's just a really cool thing to be a part of when you have a community like that.
It sounds like it. It sounds really cool. So you've done some internships, and then what happened upon graduation?
Well, upon graduation, my personal life kind of took a twist in a good way. I graduated college and got married to my longtime boyfriend of 4 years in the same weekend.
Oh, wow. Right on. Like checking off the bucket list.
Yeah. And at the time, he was in the military. And so I moved with him to Hawaii, where he was stationed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was really great place to be, really cool. But it was not the plan that I had set for myself. I had told myself, you're going to go to college and then you're going to go to Nashville, because that's where you've been trying to get for so long. And I didn't. And so I struggled with that as well, just as kind of like, I want this in my personal life. I want to be married, but I also want to be in Nashville. And I could not have both at that time. And so I struggled with that for a bit, but then I kind of rearranged it in my mind and decided to look at it as an opportunity. And we had about 2 years that we were going to be in Hawaii, and Hawaii has a small music scene, but obviously not as big as Nashville or even as big as the town that I was in previously. So I didn't really find any opportunities there to pursue that I wanted to. And so I kind of retooled it and said, well, I'm going to take this time, these next 2 or so years, and I'm going to work on my dream of being a business owner. And I'm going to see if I can make it happen. If it happens in the next 2 years, great. I'll keep going. If it doesn't, I haven't lost anything. And I'll start over when we move, or when my husband gets out of the military. And so I dove head first into creating what is now Press PR, just really devoted all of my time and energy and thoughts and everything you know, I mean, I just devoted everything to creating this business, and it worked and it happened. And so, yeah, again, it was like one of those things I struggled with, but in the end it turned out far better than I could imagine. Cause I think if I had have gone to Nashville, I don't think I would have press PR. I think I would still be hitting the streets or working for another company or, you know, doing the Nashville grind that people talk about, where you just put in your dues for so long until you make it. So I, in retrospect, that kind of hard transition turned out to be the best thing for me.
Yeah, that is really fascinating. So you had this idea of like the still kind of the session player going to Nashville.
I did.
Playing with all different bands, touring, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, when I graduated, I was kind of like many graduates out there where I had this degree in my hand and I was like, okay, now what?
Right.
You know, like I had ideas of what I might want to do. And because of the experiences that I had had in my internship and things like that, my ideas had expanded. I wasn't solely focused on being a professional musician anymore. I was kind of already leaning more towards the business aspect of the industry. And, you know, my degree played a large part in that, as well as the internship and the experiences I had. But yeah, my ideas had kind of changed by graduation, but they were still like, I got to get to Nashville.
Well, let's deconstruct a little bit, because it's really hard to start a business.
Yeah.
Especially when you're on an island. Like, I know it's part of the United States, but you're kind of...
You feel very isolated.
I was going to say, you probably feel... And everybody's probably like, oh, wow, big problem.
Right.
She's like, in Hawaii.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah, but I understand. I totally understand what you mean. There's something that, you know, you do sort of feel kind of like shut... It's like a different time zone.
Yeah.
You do feel kind of like left out of the loop. So talk to us about that. Like, how did you... Can you kind of give us the nuts and bolts of how you... essentially started this business?
Yeah, for me, it started... So the people that I was interning with, like I mentioned, they had a band as well that played shows regularly. And when I graduated and told them I was moving, we kind of mutually agreed that I could keep working for them and doing what was essentially part of public relations. I was helping with show promotion and things like that. So we kind of talked and were like, hey, they were like, we want you to keep working with us. And I wanted to keep working with them. So I kind of left college thinking, I'm still working with this band. How can I work with more bands like and do this? And so I kind of came up with, I think I want to start my own business. I think I want it to be in public relations. And I asked the people that I had been interning with for so long, I was like, what do you think about this? Can you help me? And they were so supportive. They helped me get started and they helped me kind of put together a business plan and put together packages that would make sense for artists, because they were artists, so they knew what would make sense and what would be appealing. They really helped me get going. And so I started this little business from my computer and just... went with it. And for a long time, they were my only clients. They eventually, you know, told people about me and eventually I started getting more, but for a long time they were it. And I was reaching out to clients or artists that I admired or that I thought their music was cool or whatever and saying, hey, I have a new public relations company. I would love to work with you if you ever need anything. It just kind of putting myself out there on a limb. And I had one or two really influential clients come from that. And from there, it grew by word of mouth and things. But I would say that like getting started process, it took a solid year before I was able to confidently say that I had a full-fledged like running business that had promise.
Now, how did you sort of keep hope alive during that? Because I'm sure it was probably a pretty touch and go.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully you had this one client, but how did you kind of keep yourself going?
I would say that It just maybe falls back to like my persistence. I'm notorious in my friend group for being stubborn or persistent about things. And I think I just knew that it would take time and I was okay with that. And I just kept pouring myself into it. I also didn't have anything else really to do as a young wife in Hawaii. You know, I didn't have anything else that was commanding my attention. And so I just really poured everything into that. And my whole thought process was, you know, if this doesn't work out, I haven't lost anything. I've learned so much about starting a business, of running a business and what it takes. And I've learned about marketing myself. And I've learned about this, and I can use this on a resume if it falls through. That was my thought process.
That's a great outlook. Yeah.
Nobody's going to look at a resume where you said you had a business for 2 years or whatever it might be and think that that's some small feat, because it's not. It's really hard to put yourself out there on the line like that. And it's really hard to kind of make something out of nothing. And so I just kind of had that mindset. And I also had a really great support team of people that believed in me and kept telling me, like, just keep going. You'll get there. You have to put in the work to get there. Keep going. It'll become what you make it. And so I think also just that constant encouragement from my support team was really influential in kind of keeping my spirit alive.
Yeah. And not to mention too, like the discipline.
Yeah.
That sometimes it's like, yeah, you wouldn't, you know, maybe have anything to lose, but it can work both ways, right? It can work against, I'm thinking of myself, of course, when it's like, well, nobody knows whether or not I've started this song. So if I don't finish it, nobody knows. You know, like it can be tough to just, again, like sort of keep up that discipline and keep up continuing, even when you have like nobody responding to emails or things like that, to just sort of like keep working that muscle, keep outreaching, keep sending.
Oh yeah. And it was definitely like a hard pill to swallow, especially when you're hearing no.
Yeah.
And you want something to work so bad. And honestly, it's still a hard pill to swallow. You know, it's still constant outreach, and it's still like making yourself and your business known, even though I've reached a point where I don't necessarily have to do that anymore. I feel like I can never stop doing that, because again, it is what you make it. I mean, if you continue to pour yourself into it and you continue to reach out and network and connect and build this business as if it's day one, it will continue to grow, but you still get that, you know, you still hear no and you still get discouraged.
You still hustle.
And it's crazy roller coaster. One day I can be feeling so confident about what I've created and I can be feeling so good about where I'm at. And the next day I feel like, what am I doing? Am I doing anything worthwhile? Is this working? Why am I not at this level? And, you know, it's just a constant emotional roller coaster. But I think that's for any entrepreneur, honestly, just from people I've talked to that say the same thing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But there's also something really positive about that. And the fact that that's going to keep you on that path to success, that you're still like hungry, that you still don't just sort of rest on your laurels. Yeah. I don't know why, but this popped in my head. I remember this like story, somebody was talking about this like kind of venerated old school reporter, like newscaster reporter. And the interviewer was out to dinner with him at a cafe talking about, you know, his long and impressive career. And then like two fire trucks and an ambulance and a police car like whiz by, and the interviewer like turned to look and then turned back to him, and he was like, well, isn't that great? You don't have to like go chase those things anymore. And the seat was empty because the reporter had actually jumped up and had gone to his car to chase it because it was a story. Like, that's a real reporter. Like, it doesn't just die. It's like, it's always in you, that hunger, that like something's happening or there's a new client out there that I think that is only going to serve you. That's all, even if it like gives you some insomnia or anxiety, you
right.
know, it's yeah. like, and again, not that that's a awesome thing. I don't want you to get like ulcers or anything, but I do think that sort of there is this, having that hunger is a good, and is a good sign that you're obviously in the right, you're in the right business.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a healthy balance of kind of not lose. I hope I never lose the hunger. I hope I'm never completely satisfied where I am. You know, I hope I never have a moment where I sit back and think, wow, let's stop here, you know, but I do think it's a healthy balance of having that drive and having that hunger, but also understanding that things take time and it's not instant, and it's okay if it doesn't work out. I think that's something like really important to keep in mind if you're an entrepreneur and if you're trying to make it on your own, because if you don't have that aspect of it's okay if it doesn't work out, then you will drive yourself crazy, you know?
And I would say too, you know, for our listeners out there, like PR in and of itself isn't easy.
No.
So it's like, not only are you hustling to get clients, but then you're hustling to get coverage and newsworthy items and impressions. And that's like a whole other part of insane legwork and networking and relationships and reaching out. And I think the other thing is that I'm sure, obviously you're going to know so much more about this, but it's sort of hard to quantify too, because it's like, it's, you know, I've gotten you in these few articles or whatever, but a lot of people have read it, you know, like trying to just sort of, whereas I'm sure, you've probably had clients that are like, you're not doing anything for me.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a really hard thing to quantify, just because you don't know how many people will see that article. It could be millions. It could be two, you know? And a lot of people come to me and say, I want X number of articles. And I don't ever guarantee that. If you have a publicist that does, I would be shocked. You know, I don't ever guarantee X number of articles, because my job is so dependent on the opinions of others. I can't sway anybody's opinion. I can't make them like your music. All I can do is present them the information in the best possible light and make these connections that you as a musician don't have time to make with media and things like that, to where they trust me to bring them good artists and good music. That is kind of like what a publicist offers. And it's so hard to quantify that, because, you know, I mean, I tell my clients, like, I am not guaranteeing you X amount of articles. What I'm guaranteeing you is I will present your music in the best possible light. I will present it to colleagues and media connections that I have made throughout the years that trust me and trust my opinion in music, and will for sure listen to your music and give it a chance instead of just clicking next on the email. And I promise that I will bring you my work ethic, and I will dedicate this amount of time to your campaign, and I will give it my absolute all. I will pitch you to as many as I think are relevant, and I will target your pitches, and I will really put the time and effort into it. You're paying for my time and effort. You're not paying for articles. And that's something that's really hard, I think, for musicians to understand, or anybody for that matter, just because there's no way to see the return of investment. There's no way to see, like, I spent my money on this, this is what I got. Because even if you spent your money on this and you did get 10 articles, you really got so much more than that. You know, your music got in front of hundreds of media outlets. Even if they didn't cover it, they listened to it, or they know who you are now, you know? And it's just, it's a really hard thing to explain to people about what it really means to have a publicity campaign. And those results are not always instant. I've had people come back to me and say, hey, I got this article in so-and-so magazine. I think it was because of you. Did you pitch this to them? And I did, but it was like 6 months ago, you know, like, not that we're not working together anymore, but they still they're on the radar. So,
and that's, yeah, that's, it's sort of like the culmination of efforts paying off. And it reminds me too of, you know, what people, when they talk about Spotify and like buying followers or listens, or by miraculous design, get on a playlist, right, you know, like a new Music Friday or something like that. Okay, that's wonderful, but then what?
Right.
Like, did you actually get any fans from it? Did anyone actually follow you? Yeah, you had a big spike in listens to that particular track, but did anyone stick around? And I think that that ties into, oh, I'm going to do such a good job here, I'm so proud of myself. I think that this ties into your country roots of telling a story. See what I did there?
Yeah, it does.
And that you're making a lasting impression of your clients, because you're like, this isn't just some rando with a random track that you're going to listen to for 3 minutes and bop your head and then completely forget about when you pick up your phone. This is going to be a lasting impression, a lasting story,
exactly,
of this artist, and something that you may not have expected or known about this particular artist that really is going to resonate with you and stick with you. And so the next time they hear that song or see their name, they're like, oh my God, yeah, that's that artist that really digs popcorn.
Yeah, that has a story.
You know what,
yeah,
I mean?
I mean, essentially, yeah, that's, I guess, essentially that's what you would say I'm selling, is I am selling the ability to tell your story that will make people remember. And I kind of like have this quote that says, storytelling is our favorite thing to do, because that's what I do. I talk to the artist and I say, what inspired this song? Or did you have an experience that inspired this? Or what does this mean? Or how does it apply to your life? And I incorporate that into my pitch. You know, it's never just a pitch that says, hey, so-and-so put out a new song today, give it a listen and maybe review it. You know, like, it's never just the song. It's always tied back into the artist and who they are as a person. Because when you're connecting with people on a personal level, no matter whether you're doing it through social media or through PR efforts or through, you name it, you know, there's so many outlets, but the people that connect personally tend to make a more lasting connection with their fans and their audience than the ones who are always just trying to sell you something. And you see that all the time on social media. I mean, people and influencers that you follow, or even artists, mainstream artists that you follow, the ones that you really care about, or I guess I should say for myself, I don't know if I should speak for everyone else, but the ones that I really care about are the ones that share a lot of their personal lives with me through social media. Like the artists that I really care about, like, I don't know if you know Johnny Swim. They're like one of,
no,
well, you should look them up. They're awesome.
Okay, I will.
They're one of my all-time favorite duos. And they share a lot of their personal life through social media. And I feel, instead of like feeling like a fan, I kind of feel like I'm just a friend, you know, that knows all this about them and knows what they like to do on the weekends and like things like that. And for me, like, I follow them because I like who they are as a person. It's a bonus that I love their music and think they're great. That's how I discovered them, was through a Spotify playlist where I heard their song. But then following them and like reading interviews and articles about them and following them on social media where they were so personal, I stayed a fan, became an even bigger fan because I had that personal connection. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss in this day and age, because public relations goes hand in hand with your own marketing of yourself. And so if your publicist is telling your story, but you're not living it out or backing it up, it's not going to work.
Hmm. That's a great point. That's a really good point. And I mean, you don't, because I know there's some reticence. You don't have to be like a 24/7 reality show.
Not at all.
Like, I think of like Beyonce. Like, Beyonce's got like such a tight control of who she is, and she's actually insanely private, but she does reveal, like, why, you know, why was Lemonade like so fucking incredible? Because she essentially told you, yeah, this is about, you know, my husband cheating on me and like, and the fallout.
Right. It's about her life.
Right.
I mean, like, what is your art about? Is it, are you just create, you're never creating something just to create something. Usually there's a meaning and like an inspiration behind it. And people want to know. People want to know what they're listening to, what they're watching. You know, they want to know the personal story behind it because it might align with their personal story, or it might make it that much more interesting to them.
Well, and you just made me realize too, I was talking to a tech reporter about the Spotify and their sort of their grand design of like making music a bunch of ambient playlists. Like, we're going to set your mood. This is like your happy, you know, morning mood. This will be your like cool down, chill out end of the afternoon, you know, whatever. Like, but this idea of like compartmentalizing and commercializing music, sort of reducing it down to this sort of background noise. And I think what you just made me realize is that, like, thank God that's really never going to happen, because we're human and humans crave story. So we're always going to gravitate, want to know more about, and you're not going to get a fucking story from a playlist.
No, you're not. And I mean, if you think about it, that's where music originated from. You know, our great, great, great ancestors who created music, and the music that we hear from these really ancient civilizations, a lot of times they revolve around an event, something that's happening in the community, or they revolve around a story, or they were a way for a long time, and still today, they were a way of passing stories from generation to generation. I mean, that's at the core of music as a creation and as an art form. It speaks something to the listener, whether that's an emotion or whether it's a story verbally or lyrically passed along. You know, I mean, it speaks, music speaks to the audience. It's not just something that you listen to and you don't have feeling. I mean, find me a person who can listen to music and not feel something, whether it's happy or sad or remember a time in their own life or whatever it is. Music at its very essence is telling a story, is translating emotion.
Yeah, absolutely. That was so beautifully said. And yeah, and you reminded me too, like, you know, when they, Alzheimer's patients, like when they play music, especially music from, you know, their generation growing up, it's like there's lobes in their brain that just light up that were dormant, because again, music is tapping into this. It's like beyond even, I think, our comprehension at times, like the things that that music, you know, the lobes in our brain and the certain things that it's a very powerful experience.
It is. It's really, I agree. I don't think it's something that we even fully comprehend yet. And we may never. I think it's just one of those things that can transport you back to a time or can transport you to an emotion. I mean, I get emotional when I listen to songs. I cry at songs that I'm like, this didn't even happen to me, but I can feel the emotion and I can understand I'm sad. This upsets me. You know, like, it makes you feel. It kind of connects to your heartstrings rather than just your earlobes.
No, I love it. That was just so beautifully said. Thank you so much. So we're running out of time, but can you just tell people how they can find you, where you're at on social media, all that good stuff?
Absolutely. You can look up my website, which is www.pressedfreshpr.com. I'm on social media at pressedfreshpr. And yeah, you should be able to find me through those avenues, I think.
Cool. And then do you offer like different kinds of packages? I'm just thinking, you know, for maybe the musician that, I don't know, is starting out, or yeah, do you have different sort of offerings?
I have a really wide variety, actually. I kind of tailor each individual package to each individual client because no client is at the same place with their music. So there's a lot of personalization that goes into the process, but I mean, overall speaking, we offer releases, publicity for releases, general publicity, tour support. We have an artist startup package. So if you're like, you have the music, but you don't have anything else, we help you get branded. We help you get started with everything you need. We offer branding services as far as establishing your story as an artist and establishing your brand. as an artist and what that looks like and how you translate that to your fans. Yeah, we cover a lot of things. So I would encourage you to check out the website. It goes pretty in detail to what we offer there.
Okay, I love it. Well, thank you so much, Donna. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this so much. Thank you for having me.
My special thanks once again to Dawn for such a wonderful interview, such an inspiring story. And yeah, I think the work she's doing is so important and will certainly save music from the evil overlord robots who want to turn it into ambient noise. At any rate, go check out her website, pressedfreshpr.com, or follow her at pressedfreshpr. So my loves, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Thank you again so much for continuing to tune in every week or whenever I post a damn episode. So appreciate all the love and the support. Again, I am your hostess, L. Ariel. My website is lariel.com. That's lariel.com. We are on social media at Music Jobs Podcast. That's Music Jobs with an S. And I am on social media at lariel.music. That's lariel.music. So, loves, we are going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.